Welcome to Investigating Angel, an Angel rewatch podcast where we analyze each episode of Angel the series with no spoilers. We are your hosts, Leia
and Sarah,
and if you love Angel, this is the podcast for you.
Hey guys, welcome back to Investigating Angel. We hope you guys had, well, for you American friends, had a good Thanksgiving break. I know it's been a couple of weeks since we've been back. I think it's been like 3 weeks since our last episode dropped, which feels like a really long time. It doesn't feel like very long to Leia and I because it's, you know, only been 2 weeks for us since the last recording. But we are on season one, episode 10, Parting Gifts. And we were just talking about before we started recording about how excited we are to talk about this episode.
Wesley's here. Woo!
Wesley's here. I know we could say it. Which, okay. So I was like debating how much I should say about Wesley. I was like, oh, okay. Well, like he's technically not part of the cast, like a part of the main cast yet. I was like, should I say that he's a part of it? I'm like, you know what? It happens like the very next episode. Like, Whatever. Wesley's here. Yeah. He's Wesley's the main cast here. Member. And I'm absolutely thrilled about it.
Ugh, Wesley so is huge.
Yeah, he is. I think he is up there with like one of my top favorite characters in the Buffyverse. Like, I adore him. I think he's
too.
So fun.
I really love Wesley.
Which, for everyone who is new to the Buffyverse, they are probably like, what?
Yeah, at this point, the Wesley we've known from Buffy and now is kind of a huge dweeb, but that's what we like about him.
Yeah, he's a dweeb with heart, right?
Hilarious. Alexis Denisov is just so funny. I honestly was like belly laughing this episode.
And you haven't seen How I Met Your Mother. Have you seen Alexis Denisov in any of How I Met Your Mother, like clips or anything?
No, nothing.
Okay, so I saw Buffy, saw Angel, then I watched How I Met Your Mother like 7 or 8 years ago, like right like as it was ending. And Alexis Denisov plays a reoccurring character on that show. He's extremely different from the character of Wesley. And I did not know that was Wesley. I didn't know that was Alexis Denisov. And then I was like reading some behind the scenes stuff, and someone was saying that all of the spouses of the main cast, with the exception of Jason Segel, because he's not married, all of their spouses or significant others made it onto the show and had reoccurring roles. And I was like, oh, who is Allison Hannigan's? And then it was Alexis Denisov, and that's how I found out that they were married. And then I was like, wait, that's Wesley?
No.
I didn't know until, 6 or 7 years ago. Okay, guys, was not as cultured. I was not as steeped into the Buffy fandom. give me some grace. I haven't always known everything, okay? Gosh, standard is so high for me. So much pressure.
I feel like this is it really is, though, Sarah.
I know it is. I feel it on me, crushing me.
I'm sorry.
You're like, why are you putting this on me? Sounds like your own personal thing.
Sorry.
No, but I didn't know. That was something that I figured out pretty shortly after I jumped back into the Buffy fandom and stuff. Because like, I didn't start rewatching Buffy until after college. And it was right around this time that I finished How I Met Your Mother. And then I was like, oh, Buffy, I should start watching this again. And then that's when I looked up all the trivia and stuff. But all that to say, Leia, you should look up just a clip. His name is Sandy Rivers in the show, and he is hysterical and so different from Wesley, and it's really, really funny. So
yeah, I'm definitely going to have to watch it because I love Alexis Denisov. He's just he's such a good actor and just like so fun to watch on screen and like any version of like a character that he plays. He could be funny, he could be like serious, he could be angsty, and it's just like, wow, you're amazing. So
I'm so mad that he's not in more stuff because he is a dream to watch. Him and Allison Hannigan are just phenomenal
actors. They are. Yeah, I wish we could have seen like more of them in the Buffyverse together. We do get to later on, like, no spoilers or anything, but like,
I mean, that kind of is a spoiler, but I mean, sure.
A little bit, but like, whatever. But yeah, it would have been, I mean, they do interact on Buffy a little bit, but not too much.
He's the one that was like, hey, we should just let Willow die, which always cracks me up. I was like, dude, it's your wife.
Yeah. Well, she wasn't his wife. She wasn't his wife at that point. So.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure they got married in, it was like season 7 of Buffy. Like, they got married toward the end.
No, it's actually, they got married season 5 of Angel, because there is one episode of Angel that Wesley is not in, and it's because him and Allison Hannigan were taking their honeymoon.
Oh my God.
I know.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I thought they got married before then for some reason. So they waited until she was done with the franchise. Before.
Which makes sense, because she's the one that probably has to plan it all and stuff. And she also took that year off before she started How I Met Your Mother. Probably just to kind of take some time, you know, after Buffy. But if you'll notice, there's a really, really big episode that comes up for Wesley, like right after he gets back, or like an episode or two after he gets back. And actually at Allison Hannigan's and his wedding, Joss, this is a rumor, I haven't verified this, but I've heard that Joss actually brought the script and had some of them like reenact.
Was it for A Hole in the World?
Yes, it's for A Hole in the World.
That is so cruel. What the hell?
Again, I need to verify that, but I heard that that was actually
That was probably like a gift for his wedding. He was probably like, oh my God, look at all this rich material
Yeah. And I think I remember reading that it wasn't all Joss's idea. Like, it was something that Alexis Denisoff and the other actor really wanted to get right. And so they like were kind of like talking through ideas and rehearsing and stuff like that, you know, while Allison Hannigan's running around doing everything. No, just kidding.
What a bunch of nerds.
They are artists who are very devoted to their craft.
They're eccentric.
Yeah. Who can understand them? Who can know their ways?
I feel like people that I know would just like go to a wedding to get like wasted and just like act a fool, not rehearse scenes. But
yeah,
I am not an artiste.
But yeah, so anyway, okay, segueing from that. All right, parting gifts back in season 1. Whew, okay, we're not to all the other stuff yet. Written by David Fury, who actually wrote Lonely Heart. So I was a little like, I'm still like not over that episode. But this was massively, massively better than Lonely Heart. So well done, David Fury. You have somewhat redeemed yourself. directed by James A. Cotner. Aired December 14th, 1999. So this episode and Hush, which came directly before it, were the last episodes that aired before the Christmas break. So could you imagine having this episode ending and being like, oh, does that mean Wesley's a part of the team? Like, what's going to happen from here on out? And I bet people were very relieved that it was this episode they ended on and not Hero. That would be so hard to have to like go a month without finding out what happens to the gang. So episodes like I Will Remember You and Hero are incredibly important and massive episodes that are just back to back. And so I feel like this episode had a lot riding on its shoulders because, okay, we've finished with the transition of the season. So now what happens and how do we seamlessly kind of move our characters through all the grief and the loss and the transition that has happened while also bringing in a new cast member and trying to introduce them to new viewers and also help people love them as much as they loved maybe Doyle. It had a challenge in front of it. And I think that I think it nailed it, honestly. And it's funny because we joke on here all the time about how it feels like reviewers are constantly like opposite us in their opinions on the episodes. And this is another one of those. So many reviewers.
What do you mean?
So many reviewers were like, I just think it was too soon to bring in Wesley. It feels like they're just trying to replace Doyle. They didn't give the gang enough time to like mourn the loss. And this episode was okay. I totally saw the twist coming from a mile away.
Hold on a minute. I resent that because after having watched both series fully from start to finish multiple times, I can confidently say that Doyle's death the fallout of Doyle's death and the dealing with Doyle's death was probably the only death in the show that actually got its due.
I would disagree with the exception of one death.
Like over on Buffy?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. That's different. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, but no, I totally agree. Even Jenny's death in Passion. Like, I was thinking about that because I think I wrote that down. Like, Killed by Death, the episode right after Passion. Like, they just had Jenny die and everyone's mm-hmm. just kind of carrying on. There's maybe one conversation about her death and that's it. And I think that dealing with the fallout or the aftermath of the previous episode is something Buffy has not always been good at doing. I think it gets better-ish as it goes on, but it still kind of falls short.
So I feel like for me, what I mean by it was dealt with better, I mean just like the grief in general. Like, yes, like they still deal with Doyle's death in terms of like the storyline and everything. But I feel like Doyle's death is the only one where you actually see the characters going through like the stages of grief, where you see like in this episode in particular, both like especially Cordelia in this episode. And we're going to see more of Angel's grief later. And Angel also in here. I just feel like there's never been an episode dedicated to dealing with like your own personal grief, losing somebody that you care about in the Buffyverse. It's usually like a death is attached to some big supernatural event and then they kind of have to keep moving forward because they have to defeat the big bad, and the death kind mm-hmm. of gets brushed under the rug and then you kind of forget about it. And I agree that there is one other death that is dealt with in Buffy. But I just feel like for people to say that, like, they didn't deal with Doyle's death correctly is, like, or enough. It's, like, so weird to me considering how they deal with other deaths in this particular show.
I know.
Like,
I
on Angel agree. In particular. Yeah. It's, yeah. like, Doyle's yes. was the best outcome.
Agreed.
He got the most, like airtime of grief after mm-hmm. his death. And he wasn't even in the show as long as some of, like, the other characters.
Yeah. And I think that also struck me as really odd, especially because this entire episode's theme is just like dealing with the guilt and the grief that comes after you lose someone. Mm-hmm. And I feel like they married that perfectly with Wesley, who is feeling his own personal feelings of guilt, maybe not necessarily grief, but I mean, I guess grief for kind of the life that he thought he was going to have, the life that he wanted to have. Yeah, I don't know. I enjoyed it really well. And I think that the villain they had this episode was so good. The backstory, like the whole mm-hmm. subplot, the B plot, I guess what you call it, was so good. There were several twists that we didn't see coming in this episode. I mean, I know some people saw it, but I still think that it was enjoyable because it was layered. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think this was one of the better episodes of this season that we've seen so far. So
I really like this episode, honestly. People just like to complain.
Yeah, and I think, again, people are trying to compare this season with what the show will become. And it's like, just enjoy it for what it is at this moment, too, you know?
But I mean, this is good stuff, in my opinion.
It's so good. So. I mean, we talked about how we even liked Cordelia. I feel like they covered some of the same themes that they were trying to cover in Room with a View. Passion the Nerd talks about this, too. He goes, I feel like they were trying to do a lot of the same things, but where it came off as kind of cold and stilted in Room with a View, and sometimes even kind of campy in mm-hmm. this episode, like, it hit harder. And you actually Definitely. Are like, oh, like, Cordelia actually has something that she's legitimately feeling, like something of substance. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So interestingly, Glenn Quinn is still in the main credits for this episode, which must have been really hard for first-time viewers thinking that maybe he'll come back.
Why was he still – why?
I don't know why. My guess is maybe they it had something to do with contractually something.
Oh. Right. They couldn't take him out.
Yeah. They couldn't take him out. I mean, it was like 10 full episodes or something. Yeah. I don't know what it is. But yeah, he's in this episode, which is really, really odd. And that's probably also why Alexis Denisoff is only credited as a guest, because maybe they didn't have the budget for everyone right. yet. I don't know. Because remember, when the show first started, the network gave them 12 episodes. I don't know if they've renewed it at this point and said, okay, yeah, you can have 12 more. But yeah, I don't know what that what all is going on back there. All right. So Jose Molina says, Hero turned a curve for the show, or the show turned a curve with that episode, in that all of a sudden it wasn't guest star of the week show. You were really telling stories about your characters and how their relationships affected each other. Doyle leaves Cordelia with part of his gift, that the powers that be are now in her head. Doyle remains a part of Cordelia and is there for a part of Angel's life. Would they have killed him off without Glenn's issues? I think they might have by the end of the season anyway, because that trio of characters just wasn't gelling as well as it could have. Which I was like, oh, that's so interesting. Hmm. I never got the sense that they weren't gelling, but after seeing Wesley, and maybe it's my own personal bias, because yeah. I know I love Wesley and I know who he's going to become, but I just felt like he kind of shot a little bit of a spark into the show just by appearing on screen.
I kind of agree, because it always, I mean, we've been kind of saying this too, how, you know, we would consider Doyle and Cordelia friends and Angel and Doyle friends, but not really Angel and Cordelia. And you know what I mean? So it just kind of always felt like Angel was like more friends with Doyle. This has kind of forced him now to rely more on Cordelia, mm-hmm. and Wesley's coming in now. So it's a completely different dynamic. Whereas before it was just like, they were more in like sections and they were mm-hmm. more so coworkers, I felt like. Mm-hmm. So I kind of get that. And then they had the whole like kind of underlying romance thing going on with Doyle and Cordelia. So I kind of get that. It was more compartmentalized, like the relationships. It wasn't like a big unit. It wasn't a unit of three people.
Yeah. Almost. Well, and then this also comes alongside some other quotes where people are talking about how there was the fear that Doyle and Angel were too similar. And I wonder if that was also an aspect of it. Whereas, you know, I feel like Glenn Quinn did a great job. And I feel like Doyle in some ways was distinct. But I don't know that his personality was that drastically different from Angel, if that makes sense. Like, I know they're different, but I don't know that Doyle, he stands out as like a super unique character.
Yeah, yeah.
So Tim Minear said, we had always planned to add characters throughout the season, and the idea to bring in Wesley came after the decision to kill off Doyle, but it came shortly after. In fact, my script Somnambulist, which had been banked early on, had to be revised because the first draft included Doyle. I think that's the episode after this one. And then Alexis Denisoff has said that the decision to bring Wesley on was not set in stone until Doyle's death became imminent. Up until then, they were not sure who the new character would be. And obviously, when they started the show, they thought Glenn Quinn would still be around. But things kind of go back and forth, because then you have Joss saying that he's always wanted to kill off a character. And then some people saying that, like, from the second episode, it became very clear that Glenn Quinn wasn't going to work out. So it's just kind of murky. I think there was, like, a lot of like talk going on there, and then they didn't really know for sure. And then at that point it was like, okay, well, we have to get somebody in. David Greenwalt says, when Wesley joined the show, you know, on Buffy, he was more comic relief. It was interesting to bring him onto this and try to evolve him into something more serious. I love humor, but you have to be careful that it doesn't go into camp. Buffy was never camp, but a lot of directors didn't know that in the early days. The same with Angel. The humor has to grow out of either tragedy or the drama of the show. Alexis was fighting an uphill battle. People hated him because they loved Doyle. Understandable. They were absolutely dead set against him. They didn't like him in Buffy. But he wasn't supposed to be likable in Buffy. Mm-hmm. You could say the same thing about Cordelia. You know, this character in Buffy, I don't know how she's going to work out in the show. Well, you bring them into the show and suddenly you get to see more sides of them. Eventually, Alexis won over a lot of the fans. Some of them begrudgingly, some of them wholeheartedly. And for the record, Wesley was not supposed to be a replacement for Doyle. Cordelia was the replacement for Doyle, which is why she was given the visions. Which I don't know how I feel about that. Because I was like, well, Cordelia was already there. So
I guess she's supposed to be Doyle's replacement in terms of like Angel's connection to the powers that be. But in terms yeah. of like, do they mean like friendship wise also?
Like, could be. Maybe? I don't know.
Yeah.
And then David Greenwalt goes on to say, the thing about Alexis is that he's a pretty tremendous actor. He'd been on London's West End, choreographed fight scenes for a fairly famous production of Hamlet there. This guy really knew his stuff, and he's very subtle and very precise, and I liked what he brought to the show. We gave him more of a life separate from Angel. We didn't want him to just be the guy coming in to read a book. The character wasn't a total buffoon, although a guy who can fall down on coffee beans always has a place in my show. But you have to balance him. The whole thing that attracted me to the Joss Whedon universe as a former movie guy is that I could do humor and drama in the same shows. I like the tragedy and the comedy. But yeah, I am a huge fan of Alexis, and I think the decision to bring him in and to give him kind of his own thing apart from Giles, because it would have been really easy for them to be like, well, you're the book guy now, so you're just going to be just like Giles. Like, even see kind of hints of that in this episode where he pulls out the book, but he does it in a very Wesley-like way mm-hmm. that is very distinct from Giles. And you can tell right away that they're going to go in a different direction, and it's not going to turn into like, okay, basically we're going to recreate the exact same team we have over on Buffy. No, these are different characters.
And also, I'd like to point out, he just fits right in.
Yes.
This one, like his first episode, it feels like he's been there for like the whole other 9 episodes that we've had.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just felt like kind of seamless to me. Maybe that's also because I've seen the rest of the show.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So I kind of know, but like, I don't know. It's just, they just have such a great dynamic. Like, he works so well with David and works so well with Charisma. Like, Charisma and Alexis are like so hilarious together.
They're so funny together.
And even David, like, Alexis brings out this side of, like, Wesley brings out the side of Angel that is just so, I don't know. It's different than his friendship with Doyle in the sense that, I don't know, it's just like lighter for some reason.
They did a really interesting thing with this episode, because I remember the first time I watched it, I was like, this guy is coming back. Because I was kind of like, I didn't like him over on Buffy. But by the end of the episode, I was sold, because they do a phenomenal job of showing the self-loathing that Wesley has for himself and the guilt and the embarrassment and just like the purposelessness he has. And I love how he calls himself a rogue demon hunter, because who else is a rogue demon hunter? Like, Angel is too.
What's a rogue demon?
What's a rogue demon? That would be Angel. No, but like, and I mean, they make clear parallels to like the fact that he's trying to dress like Angel and stuff. And yeah. So I don't know. I think that there is a lot of capacity. There's a lot of places they can go with him, especially because he was the one that messed up with Angel and Faith so badly. Mm-hmm. I just think he's very compelling, and you see a lot of that in this episode. So I'm excited. All right. Now that we've psychoanalyzed the episode. Oh, hey, look who's back. It's Randall. If you guys have not heard.
Very nice.
If you guys have not heard our analysis, I will remember you. We talk a lot about the oracles, and it's really, really funny. I'm not going to repeat all of the quotes and stuff, but you should go back and take a listen, because, oh my goodness, I think we were just all dying of laughter over there. Tavi and Leah, I think we're just like, what? And I was like, it gets worse.
This man is unhinged, honestly.
The saltiest person I have ever met.
So mad. For what?
Yeah. For what? Yeah.
For what?
Who knows? It's a mystery. And then he's like the first person, the line, you try our patience. And I was like, well, is that Randall speaking, or is that Oracle number one?
The Oracle, like the sister Oracle, is so like, she's so kind. She's like, oh, like if he was your friend, he will always be your friend. And then the Randall guy's like, no.
What is done.
No way.
I wrote in my notes, oh, look, it's Randall again with his sucky attitude. Also, I do notice they moved the actors closer together. They made it very – they like pointedly showed that Angel and the oracles are closer together, because remember in one of the quotes they were saying that it was really hard for Randall to remember his lines and the other ones because they had to shout back and forth and they couldn't hear. So I'm pretty sure that they moved it closer so that, you know, Randall could get his lines right, you know.
Oh, sorry. Randall needs extra assistance.
Randall needs help on multiple levels. Okay, but in all seriousness, I'm really glad that they showed this scene with Angel, because it would make so much sense if his friend died and he knows he can talk to oracles that can turn back time. Like, would you not go and try and talk to them? Mm-hmm. Like, it makes sense. I really like what the female oracle said. She says, to what end? To nullify his noble death, to leave his atonement unfulfilled. I think that speaks so much, not only to like what they're trying to discuss in the episode, but also just like on a meta level in the show in general. If we were to resurrect Doyle, that whole episode that we just watched and covered would be meaningless. Like, it would not – or not meaningless, but at least it wouldn't be as impactful as it is, mm-hmm. knowing that that's the last time we see Doyle, you know? The oracles are like, It is of no consequence. The war rages on. Do not come to us again on so self-serving a matter. And then they said, when basically one door closes, another one opens, and Angel is kicked out of the Oracle's room. So then we cut to a demon that is running down an alley. And I think they intentionally tried to make this guy look like he was going to maybe be the next character that joins the gang. I feel like he was the red herring. Like, yeah. You're thinking, oh, this guy's the new Doyle replacement. And, oh, we have to help him because the demon hunter is after him. So there's like three different twists in this episode. And I think that was one of them where you're like, oh, okay, Barney's going to be, you know, probably their new friend.
Boy, was I wrong.
So in Angel's office, Cordelia is looking for a coffee cup for Doyle. Angel comes in. He's so sweet. He's like, hey, what are you looking for? She's like, Doyle's special coffee mug. Aww. And I love how he's like, Doyle didn't have a special coffee mug. And she's like, don't you think he should have? And then she kind of like verbally processes and is like, I think it would make me feel better if there was something tangible that he left behind, some evidence that he was here, but there's nothing, almost like he never. And I love this because Shangle's review made a really interesting point. They talked about how to Cordelia, material possessions are very important. Like, you know, her parents lost all their money. She had a lot of possessions. She had handbags mm-hmm. and clothes and shoes and cars and all that stuff. And Doyle didn't care about any of that type of thing. And so then he died. And so in her mind, like, in order to find something that's precious to Doyle, it has to be a material possession because that's what would be important to her. Mm-hmm. And so I really loved that point because then later on when she finds out that he actually gifted her with the visions, for her that was something tangible and something that she was able to, I think, actually really – like she was able to realize how much Doyle actually cared for her. And I was like, oh, I never caught that before. Also, it's very significant. Cordelia's outfit, she's wearing like white. And we have not seen her in this bright of a color. Like she's been wearing a lot of, like we talked about, burnt orange and darker colors. And I think they're signifying like the change that's going to happen with Cordelia. She's almost kind of like a blank canvas now. Like we don't know how the visions are going to affect her later on. So Angel, in his very compassionate, says, get out. And Cordelia's like, what? He's like, I mean, out of the office, Cordelia, go take the day off. She's like, wait a minute. I know what you're doing. You're pushing me out of your life like you always do, closing yourself off. And he's like, no, I'm just trying to be nice, genuinely.
He really is, though.
She's like psychoanalyzing him like, haha.
Yeah, I think she's reverse psychology. Just a little bit. I think that she just wants to be around somebody. And yeah.
So then she's like, oh, no, I'm staying. You can't get rid of me that easily. And he's like, okay. And then she's like, oh, wait, but I do actually have this audition. It's super important. So I got to go now. You know, I wouldn't go if, but it's a national audition or a national commercial. Angel's just like, I can't keep up with your mood swings.
He's like, please stay, go. I don't know. Just you don't have to, but maybe if you want to, you can. I don't know.
Whatever makes you feel better. So Cordelia opens the door. Barney scares her and she scares Barney and she's like, I scared you. Look in the mirror lately. He's like, every chance I get. And then he's like, you're him. Talks to Angel. This show has like this weird obsession with picturing people in their underwear because I think about like Kate's thing. Casey. I was like, does that actually – okay, I do have to ask. Does that work for anybody? Has anyone ever pictured other people in their underwear? Because I don't know about you.
No.
When I'm giving a presentation, my mind goes blank. I don't picture anything.
Same. Honestly, same. Why would you want to picture the audience in their underwear? Like, wouldn't you like giggle or like, wouldn't that make you distract you more? Yeah. Be like,
We find out that Barney's a demon because, like, you know, that's shocking news to all of us, and least of all to Angel.
He's like, by the way, I just want to tell you right now, I'm a demon. And Angel's like, thank you so much for telling me.
I love how he's like, giving the impression that he's super forthright and super honest and stuff when, you know, he's the bad guy of the episode. Yeah. The actor, I think his name is Murray Stanley. I don't remember what it is, but he just did a phenomenal job. He really kind of made us like him and then really kind of turned a corner and became super awful.
Oh my God. Creepy. Like this. Like
yeah.
this. It was yeah, like no, the snap of, it was. Like literally, it was like, I'm like, what? What's happening?
Yeah. I was like, wow, way to be subtle there. Like all of a sudden he like got the information and then was like, yeah. Anyway, we'll talk about it in a second. So Angel's like, I appreciate the candor. And then Barney like asks him why he's not in his coffin, and Angel goes off on this rant. Angel
gets so mad.
I haven't seen Angel this mad in a while. He's like, it's a misconception made popular by hack writers and ignorant media. I was like, wow, okay.
Like, I hate the stereotype. We don't sleep in coffins.
Not much gets Angel riled up, but apparently stereotypes do. Jeez. Barney's like, got it. Sorry. Don't want to push any sore spots.
Okay, but like imagine Angel in every single one of his like homes so far has this giant coffin that he just rolls into like Interview with the Vampire style and just like sleeps in there and then has to wake up. Like, come on.
No. You think Buffy would stay the night in that thing? Not at all.
Buffy would hop in there with him for sure, but like...
Okay. Okay, what am I saying? But, you know, could you imagine if Cordelia, like in Room with the View, where she lives with Angel, and he's like, well, you can take the coffin. That's all I have. And she's like, oh. And then she's like, Angel, you got peanut butter in your coffin. Oh, my God. That would actually be pretty funny, but I would have so much trouble taking the show seriously after that.
Yeah.
So we cut to Cordelia at the audition. She looks very nervous. She's basically just talking about a wine stain on a shirt. She is not a good actress at all.
She's having like a mental breakdown.
She starts crying and they're like, well, that was good. Not quite what we're going for. And then she like jumps up and down, tries to compose herself, and then starts again. And actually looked like it was going to go pretty well. And then she has a vision.
Ooh.
I don't know about you, but this is the single best thing they could have done for Cordelia's character.
Mm-hmm.
It's also interesting because Cordelia is probably the most uncompassionate character on the show.
The most selfish.
And the fact that they are going to have her feel what these victims are going through. It's so interesting that they also have the episode with an empath demon.
Yeah.
Because there's an important distinction. All Things Philosophical talks about how empaths don't just know what people are feeling. They feel it. They experience it. And so I think that is supposed to be a parallel to what Cordelia feels when she has the vision. And I think that is such a brilliant, brilliant twist. So then we see another clip of the motorcycle guy riding down the street, cut to Angel's office. Angel's like, okay, who's hunting you? Barney's like, I don't know. Whoever he is, he's unstoppable, like a machine. And we like go back and forth to like this guy's feet. And like we're thinking Terminator. We see him like rifling through like a bunch of weapons. It's so menacing. I think they were trying to go for like a Terminator vibe here. Angel's like, what do you think? What makes you think he means you harm? Barney's like, he's an assassin.
Oh.
And then, you know, guy in leather gets off the motorcycle. But then basically Angel kind of clues in that this guy's maybe not telling him everything that he should. And I really like that Angel stands up and kind of intimidates the guy, kind of almost as if Angel senses like his gut is telling him this guy's not on the up and up. And Barney's like, I'm a nobody. Like, I'm no different from anybody else. And Angel's like, no, in my experience, when someone's being pursued that tenaciously, it's generally because the pursuer has a strong grievance against the pursued. And then he basically is like, well, you know, I'm an evil guy, but I'm not like evil, evil. I just like to, you know, cheat at cards because I'm an empath and I read emotions. Which is interesting that they did that because Doyle was someone who liked to gamble and stuff. And so again, I think it's a misdirect of like, oh, maybe this guy will join the team.
So do we think that this demon has a soul? That's always something that that's like a tough question because I feel like maybe that's something only for vampires. But like, he's clearly evil. So does he have a soul or does he not have a soul?
Dude, I don't know. That's the hard thing about this because then it's like, because they're not pure demon, then maybe they have the ability to have a soul.
Right.
I don't know.
It's just interesting. Yeah. Because it's like, I guess this all fits into the more like morally gray demons of the show. I don't know. Yeah.
Well, think about the last episode in Hero when they were helping demons and it was never said whether they have souls or not.
Whether they have souls or not. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, does it matter? Because Angel's slogan is help the helpless. So if someone is helpless, regardless of if they have a soul or not, we're still going to help them. So then we cut back to Cordelia coming into the office. Barney is not here. We don't know where he is. Angel comes, looks up from what he's writing, and Cordelia is like walking towards him like she's in a trance. And Angel's like, everything okay? And she just like smooches him. And he's like, okay, okay, Cordelia.
It's
he's
so like, you know, awkward.
I think you're acting out of grief and everything. And it is the most platonic kiss. I honestly think at this point we've seen more platonic kisses between Cordelia and all the male men that she's kissed than we've seen like actual passionate kisses.
Yeah.
Like, it's so weird. She's a gorgeous woman, but every single kiss is like, where is the passion? Yeah. What is going on?
To be fair, I think this kiss was supposed to be like awkward and weird.
No, I think it was meant to be like, you know, earth shat. I'm joking.
You think so?
No.
I'm like, ugh. No, Angel not is literally like pushing her away. He's just like,
yeah. No, she clearly just is lost in her own world of get this off of me. I don't want these gifts. Yeah, no, I agree with you 100%. It was completely platonic. And I mean, all the kisses in this episode were meant to be platonic with the exception of Wesley. Because that was definitely on his side, not platonic. But it's just funny, like, Charisma Carpenter does way too good of a job with those kinds of – that style of kissing, let's just say.
I definitely agree.
She's like, I didn't feel anything. Did you feel anything? And Angel's like, no, that's what I'm trying to say. And I was like, side note, I think I'm going to use that when we get to seasons 3 and 4. So Cordelia says, I thought our kiss meant something, talking about Doyle, and obviously not Angel. She's like devastated. She's like, instead, he used that moment to pass it on to me. Angel figures out she's talking about the visions, and he kind of like has to sit down as he's taking it all in. And I love how he kind of puts his head in his hands like, oh, oh, Lordy, why is it Cordelia that's the one that has the visions that means I'm stuck with her?
He's literally sitting there and it's the realization that you can see on his face, like, oh my God, this is going to keep happening. Like, she's not going anywhere. She's really not going anywhere.
She is my connection to the powers that be, and she can't even remember what the vision was. This is going so swimmingly. So Cordelia's like, I'm nobody's link to anybody. I lost control of my entire nervous system. I might have drooled a little bit. Angel's like over there not listening to a word that she's saying. And then he's like, okay, what was the vision? Cordelia can't remember it. And I do have to say,
no, this first, was one of the- she's like, what was it? And she starts talking about her commercial.
Oh,
she's
yeah.
Like, oh, this is Stain Be Gone something. He goes, the vision, Cordelia.
He's like, okay, if we're going to do this, we need to get on the same page here. And I was going to say, like, Angel rarely, like, full-on loses his temper. And so, like, you know this means something to him. Like, hey, someone's in trouble. Like, I want to see this vision. Which it is really amazing to me that the powers that be had the vision happen. Like, the person that technically Cordelia needed to save was herself, which is so interesting.
It is really interesting.
So she's like, oh, it's this ugly gray blobby thing. He's like, well, the difference is if you saw it in a vision, it could be an ugly gray blobby dangerous thing. She's like, I don't care. I want it out of me. And if kissing is the only way to get rid of it, I will smooch every damn frog in this kingdom. Okay, Angel's not a frog. Okay, Cordelia. So then Barney comes out of the bathroom. The bathroom. And she just goes up and kisses him. Listen, this is someone you don't even know. They were just in the bathroom. Do you know if they washed their hands? You don't know where those lips have been. I don't know. That was the grossest part of the episode to me. Not in these post-COVID times.
I think it was the grossest part for Cordelia too, because she literally goes like... She's just like...
Well done. Can you do that again? Wonderful reenactment. Yep. I can see it perfectly. ASMR for all you lovely listeners. She's like totally insulting this guy that she just met that is a client. Cordelia, how do you expect people to pay you when you keep like insulting
them? I'm just happy that we've had a few scenes of Cordelia not screaming about money. I'm just happy. Like,
that's true.
Please. God, no more.
We're on to the next thing. We're on to the vision thing now. So Angel hands her a paper and pens, has tried drawing it. He's like, I'm going to go check out his apartment, talking about Barney. He thinks whatever is chasing him knows where he lives. And then he turns around and you could totally tell Angel was saying this like sarcastically, like not fully seriously, but he was like, hey, behave yourself. I don't want to find you two necking on the couch when I get back.
Angel necking? Made a funny.
Angel sounds like he's 50.
He is very old.
He is very old. Oh my gosh. But that was so funny. Like he was clearly like being like a little bit funny about it. But I think there was like a small part that was making him a little serious.
He
was being
like a shit about it. He thought he was cracking jokes.
I just imagine if Angel were to come back and that were happening, he'd probably just walk right past them and be like, just tell like, me when okay. you're done.
Okay.
That man has to deal with a lot. God bless him. All right. This is just great. So Angel's like getting to the building. We see the motorcycle outside the building. This is the creepiest hallway I've ever seen. The lights are flickering. The cleaning lady looks completely unperturbed. She's like, oh, this just, you know, I work in this creepy apartment and it doesn't faze me at all. And he walks to the door, gets pushed in the door. We see a shadowed figure holding a crossbow.
Ooh, and who can is it be? Who is it?
Wesley
Wyndham Price.
I adore Wesley. So he comes in and I love that like we get that cut. And we're like, oh my gosh. And then Angel just sticks his hands in his pockets. Like they're literally
just like, all right, never mind.
They cut back and Wesley's like 6 inches from Angel. The crossbow's like so close to him. And Angel, instead of like holding up his hands, trying to move it away, he just sticks his hands in his pockets like, oh, you're
a fool.
You're just a fool. Yeah, like you're not even worth me pulling my hands out. Like I'm not
I just think about
you.
Honestly, what I find so funny is like, do you remember Angel and Wesley's first meeting? The first time they ever met was in Bad Girls at the Bronze.
Yes.
And Wesley rolls up with the freaking amulet in his jacket and he's just like being a little shit to Buffy and Angel's like, just there staring. He's like, "Do you have the amulet?" That was the first thing Angel like
Yep.
I just feel like Angel's first impression of Wesley was like, who is this clown?
Yeah. Well, and Wesley's first impression of Angel, because like he saw how cool Angel looked there, and Angel had the full attention of the Slayer that Wesley mm-hmm. was trying to get the attention of. And then he ends up getting kidnapped, him and Giles. And then who comes and saves him? Angel. And Buffy. You know? And he looks really cool because it's that moment he goes, he's right here. And he like walks in and like punches the vampire out or whatever.
Ooh, that was a good scene.
Yeah. That's when you were like, okay, they're definitely like getting ready to start Angel the series. Like we got to ramp up the heroics. But yeah, I think that there was a part of Wesley that kind of thought Angel was really cool and wanted to be like him. And
100%.
The motorcycle, even though Angel doesn't ride a motorcycle, but you know, the leather jacket, all the things that Wesley thinks are really cool. I think he got a lot of that from Angel, which is kind of funny.
Wait, so are you saying Wesley has a crush on Angel also, just like Doyle did?
You know what, Leia? Yeah. I think every single person in this universe has a crush on Angel. Like,
I agree.
I think that that's just canon.
Yeah, I like, wholeheartedly agree.
I'm not even joking.
I'm dead serious.
And I mean, I don't even mean like necessarily like a sexual crush. I think it'd just be like, you're my guy crush that I want to be like you.
Yeah.
Like, 100%. They either want to be him like, or they want to
Xander,
be with him.
Even Xander, when he 100%. Doesn't want to admit it, like Xander definitely. So much jealousy. I think the only person who isn't is like Oz.
Yeah, because Oz is equally as cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oz doesn't want to be either of those things because he already is.
100%.
Even Giles was a little starstruck.
In the beginning, they had like a little bromance. Like,
yeah, I know. So Wesley's like, I wager you thought you'd never see me again, you know, trying to be all cool. And he just like, to tell you the truth, I just didn't think about you at all.
This scene, I'm not joking. I was cackling. I don't know why I find this scene so hilarious. Like, It is so funny.
Just because it is. The physical comedy that Alexis Denisov does and the way that Angel plays off him really well as the straight man, works really, really well. And I think that might be what this show has been missing, because I think Doyle, while funny, was not really played off for comedy as much, especially because you could get the sense that they were trying to make Doyle out to be way more serious than he was, but we didn't know his full backstory, but then they didn't want him to be that comedic. Bringing Wesley in, we already know he's comedic. Yeah. Now they just have to make him slightly more serious, and it works.
It really does. Like, this just works.
It's a joy to watch, and mm-hmm. I'm so stoked to talk about it further. So Angel's like, what are you in? Wesley's like, hop, 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 hop. He holds up his crossbow. I'm the one asking the questions here. I think it only fair to warn you. Any sudden movement, and Angel just bats crossbow right out of his hand. He's like, right. He's like, you had a question?
Cool.
And the funny thing is, that's the moment that his facade breaks. And you see that Wesley is the same old Wesley. That he's, he's hiding behind his toys, his facade, whatever it is he's trying to look like. Well, then Angel sees right through him, walks around. It says the script.
This is when David Boreanaz is like obviously like trying to hold it together so hard. He is just smirking his face off, and it's so funny.
He just goes and stands right next to him and says, interesting look for you, motorcycle. The Watchers Council trying out a new image. Like, he just cuts straight to it. Like, he already knows the answer. He already knows. And he's like, twinsies. And Wesley walks away from him, trying to distance himself from the comparison, and puts his leg up on the side of the bed.
He just falls over.
In point of fact, and he's very interesting in how he words this. He says, in point of fact, I no longer work for the council. So he neither confirms nor denies whether he was sacked. I came to the conclusion that I was of greater value. So he's not lying. But he's also not saying – he's making it sound like it was his choice. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he's not coming out and saying it. But, you know, very clearly Angel sees right through it. Angel's like, they fired you. Wesley's like, hardly. And then he puts the blame on Buffy. He says, with Buffy unwilling to follow council orders, there was simply no opportunity to function as watcher. Basically saying, I was never given the chance because my slayer did not cooperate. So therefore, it's not my fault that the Watchers Council, which is very different because at the end of the episode, he actually takes accountability and responsibility for what happens. Angel's like, you're a demon hunter. And he's like, rogue demon hunter. Get it right. So then they start talking about the nasty bugger's trail that he's on. Angel's like, we're after the same demon. Wesley gives him information saying that he's left a trail of corpses, human and demon, all mutilated. Each of the victims possesses a unique power, telepathy, poison tongues, healing hands, whatever it was, but it's been ripped off of them or out of them. And Angel's like, okay, he's collecting power. So Angel asks if he was short and ruddy complexion, which, again, interesting because Angel's first instinct, I think, was that Barney was a bad guy. And then Wesley goes, no, he's tall, powerful, yada, yada, all that stuff. And then we see the yellow slime fall on Wesley's jacket. Angel figures out that it's the guys in the room. They fight. He gets tossed out a window. There's another window that Angel will have to pay for.
Just put it on the bill.
Put on the bill. And so then they come back to Angel's apartment, and Cordelia is sketching the gray blob and having a conversation with Barney, which, watching the scene, I was just like, what did people do before phones? Like, she's stuck in an apartment with this guy she barely knows for hours, and they have nothing to do except sit and talk.
Yeah.
My worst nightmare. No, thank you.
Put on a movie, like the news, do something.
Something in the background so you can like have an excuse for not talking. So Barney clues into the fact that she is grieving, tells her that he's empathetic. He says, I feel your feelings when you feel them. It's a gift my kind is blessed with. And Cordelia immediately is like, hey, this is private. You shouldn't be nosing around in people's business. And I was like, okay, suddenly Cordelia is all about minding your own business. When it is her own business.
Yeah.
And then Cordelia apologizes, says, "I'm sorry, I'm just going through a difficult time right now." They have a conversation. She talks about Doyle, talks about how he was really sweet, and then says, you know, he kept the secret that he was half demon from me. And then she says, you know, you remind me a little of him. Again, another red herring.
Right.
And Barney is really kind and charming in the scene. And it was actually kind of nice to see Cordelia opening up with someone, because she does that so rarely. Angel and Wesley come down the stairs. Barney and Wesley see each other. Barney's like, ah, that's him. Angel's like, okay, all right, it's okay, it's Wesley. Wesley goes straight to the books, or is about to go straight to the books. Cordelia, what does she have, like, a guy radar, and, like, without even seeing that it's, like, who it is?
How does she not see who it is?
Goes into this, like, trance state of, like, I must get rid of this gift, and then, like, starts to kiss Wesley. Wesley's like, hey, this kiss that we had a couple months ago has been keeping me up at night because of how badly I fumbled it. Now I get a second chance. And he gives his all. He really gave his heart into that.
Honestly, he kind of redeemed himself from, like, the
last kiss. I agree. It was hot.
There was more passion in this kiss than, like, any other kiss that either of them have had on screen.
Yeah, it was good. I was like, this is hot. Like, he grabs her and pulls her. I was like, that is good. And, like, you can tell it does something for Cordelia too, because yeah. She kind of spaces out for a minute.
Like, whoa.
My headcanon is that kiss they had in the stacks is what kept Wesley up at night. And, like, he's hoping he'll get a redo. And then the fact that she's like, wait, Wesley? Shot down. And then she's like, what are you doing here? Are you working with Angel? And he's like, okay. And he was like, well, I thought this kiss was considerably better than the last time.
Yes, Wesley.
No, it was just kind of an experiment.
You were right, Wesley.
Poor man. Listen,
I say he redeemed himself with this kiss.
Oh, 100%. You know, I agree.
This was redemption for Wesley.
It was a great kiss from my standing, like where I stood. Yeah. So Wesley, a lone wolf such as myself, never works with anyone. I'm merely allowing Angel to assist me.
And she's like, God. Oh,
wow.
Cool.
what's the line? I'm a rogue demon hunter now.
What's a rogue demon?
She's like, aren't all demons rogue?
I just keep thinking about Cordelia being like, he's so classy. Isn't he so classy?
Oh, yeah.
I'm like,
excuse me. Him? I believe Wesley was talking. Have you ever thought about doing books on tape?
Oh, my God.
It's so funny to see her, like, kind of slip right back into that. So then Barney's like, so what you're telling me is all this time your friend wasn't hunting me. He was hunting something else that was hunting me. And Barney's like, well, something else was after me because Angel's like, because of your empathetic ability. And then Cordelia goes, the feelings thing. What kind of demon would do that to another demon? Again, I think they're setting up this episode to kind of show Cordelia how her powers can be misused, and kind of this warning to her to be unselfish with her gift, that right. It can be misused and used for other things. I don't know. I just love the parallel. I thought it was really, really great. So Wesley immediately comes back and is like, it's a Kungai demon. It's an Asian origin. They figure out basically that it is probably on the east side in the Asian district. So Angel decides to take off and go. And Wesley's like, wait, don't you mean we? And Angel goes, I work alone, Wesley. And Wesley's like, no, this is my demon. And so this is immediately like, okay, Angel is feeling guilty for what mm-hmm. happened with Doyle. And Wesley is feeling guilty because of everything that happened in season 3, but also feeling like he has things that he needs to prove himself here.
Right.
So Angel goes upstairs, and Cordelia, again, showing a surprising amount of empathy, says, are you all right, Wesley? Like, she has been killing it this episode. I really appreciate it. Like,
me too.
Grief looks good on her. I know that sounds really harsh, but like,
it's true. It's nice to see her having, like, genuine human emotions and like kind of embracing them a little bit and not just kind of hiding away from it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I it does look good on her, which is, it's not a, like a bad thing to say because this is, you know, a fictional character, but it's just nice to see that she has like more layers than just snark and that she actually truly cared about Doyle.
That she's noticing when other people are in pain apart from what's going on. I mean, if there was ever a time for Cordelia to be justifiably selfish in her pain, I think this episode would be it because she just lost a friend and she's dealing with a very world-altering thing with the visions. Right. So it would make sense if she was a little bit more self-absorbed, but instead we're seeing the opposite. We're seeing a Cordelia that is a little bit more unselfish, like slowly as the episode progresses. And that makes me really excited. Wesley's like, no, these pants, they tend to chafe one's legs. One's what, Wesley, as he waddles away. All I think about is David Schwimmer in Friends. I don't know if you've seen that one episode where he's wearing the leather pants. And
oh,
then he,
yeah.
He's trying, I think it's like the Vaseline or whatever, the petroleum jelly that he has all over his legs. Maybe try a little bit of that, Wesley.
I don't want to imagine that, actually.
No, no, I don't. So then we cut to the Lotus Spa. And okay, this whole scene. So the character that Angel is talking to, Soon, is the character's name. So despite the scene taking place in LA's Koreatown, neither Angel nor the old woman tending to the demon speak proper Korean. Angel's lines are complete gibberish. And while the old woman's lines are,
They couldn't even have him say a few lines in Korean.
I know. I know. It's so bad. That's anytime outrageous. A show does that, I just, yeah, I know. Shows still do this to this day, too. There was a show I was just watching. I don't remember which show it was. And they were speaking gibberish. They weren't speaking an actual language. Oh, it was Marvel. I think it was like Hawkeye or something. Like they weren't actually speaking Russian or something. They were like, it was like, how hard is it in this day and age to just find someone who can write those lines
honestly,
for you?
It's just a just, few lines. Like just,
even if you're mispronouncing it, people appreciate the effort into their culture and what you're trying to say. Yeah, it's just, I don't know.
Yeah, that's very sketch.
Very insensitive at the very least.
It is. Like, just say it in the language. It's one or two lines.
Yeah.
And like you said, it doesn't have to be perfect, but it's like.
We already suffered through Angel or David Boreanaz's bad Irish accent.
Honestly.
Having him speak in, you know, a bad Korean accent wouldn't be the worst thing
ever. Or just don't have characters speak other
languages. That
is
true.
If you're not going to have them speak the actual language. Like,
yeah. Yep. The old woman's lines are actually Korean, but her accent is off because the actress they got to play the Korean lady was Japanese.
Oh my God.
So yeah, it just gets worse. And they said her speech is very childish. It's very like simplistic in the way that it's saying it. Yeah. The only person who speaks Korean decently in the entire episode is the character Soon. So the character that Angel is talking to in this episode is speaking Korean. But Angel's lines are gibberish. They couldn't ask the actor to just write down the lines in Korean.
Yeah,
that makes it worse.
Ugh.
Yeah. Once just again, like, showing that like, the Buffyverse is just tone deaf.
It's like
when
they
it comes
put so much effort into other things, and this is just one thing where it's like it's so simple. And I get it. You're asking the actors to learn lines in a different language, but it's like if you're gonna use those lines, I don't know, it's just kind of icky that it was, it's like, oh, it's just gibberish, like what?
Yeah, that's embarrassing.
Yeah, really. Yeah, like how cool would it have been to actually have like David Boreanaz speak Korean for those two lines or three lines that he has to say.
Yeah, but he says let's see, two lines. It's, you don't mind if I take a look around, do you, Soon? And then, forgive me, I respect you have a business to run, and then show me. That would not be hard, honestly.
No.
So then Angel goes in the back. We cut back to Angel's apartment. Cordelia finishes her drawing. Barney's like, hey, that's nice. What is it? And she's like, I don't know. I have no idea. And he's like, you're frustrated. And she's like, okay, that's a spooky talent. You can just tell that I'm frustrated. And he goes, no. And he's like, can I help you? So she explains that she gets visions, that Doyle gave it to her. It's from the powers that be. Barney is really kind. He says, your friend left you with that little inheritance. And she says, I'm never going to forgive him for this. And he says, why? What? Choosing you? Trusting you with an enormous responsibility? Believing that you were the only one worthy of such a rare and important gift? Such a contrast to her saying he used her at the beginning of the episode. And you can watch Cordelia's perspective shift as she realizes that, oh, I have things that are like really precious and important to me. Doyle had things that were really precious and important to him. And he gave me that. And it's just
the most precious possession.
Really cool.
Yeah.
Because it's broken down into language that Cordelia can understand. Barney then says, seems like he gave you the most valuable thing he had, which I kind of teared up a little bit. I thought that was like one of the most beautiful lines.
Yeah. This Barney guy, he was just seeing some true stuff. But that's the thing about the Buffyverse. Like, even you have to listen to what the evil people have to say.
Because that a lot is of true.
The time, like, they kind of have a point.
They always give the best lines to the villains, don't they? And they're always, like, somewhat truthful. They're just,
like, using it against you. Like, they use it against you to, like, get into your head. And then they pull, like, a fast one on you. But
yeah.
Sometimes they got a point. Like...
Yeah, they do. And you know who did that really well?
The mayor?
And I wrote that down. Well, the mayor, but I was going to say Angelus.
Yeah.
The fact that Barney uses truth to twist and then turn it back on people is something we saw Angelus do in season two. So Angel finds the Kung guy laying on a table with an old lady wiping its brow. She says he's dying. Back to Cordelia. Cordelia's in the kitchen making coffee. All of a sudden, Barney has turned really, like, creepy. Like, like you said earlier, like, it's like a switch.
Yeah.
He was, like, so nice. And then all of a sudden, like, I don't know. I was like, why didn't he just play the long game? Why didn't he say, hey, let's go out for a while?
I really like this reveal, though, because you're kind of, like, putting the pieces together. When Angel walks into the room and you see the demon laying on the table and he's just, like, injured. Yeah. And you're like, oh, wait a minute. Like, is not like the right demon? And then all this talk, like, I feel like they kept bringing up, like, oh, this demon that's snatching up people's abilities. And then, you know, you have Barney and Cordelia by themselves. And I, like, just watching the episode, obviously, I knew it was going to happen. But I just kept thinking, oh, like, you know, obviously, Cordelia hasn't revealed her visions to Barney yet. It's just kind of cool because it's like there's like slowly being revealed, but then you get to a certain point where it's like, okay, Barney's evil now. And I really like that he just kind of, it's like a switch that goes off and he goes, okay, I got what I needed. Now I'm gonna just go for it. But I have a question. So do we think Barney, like, why do we think Barney went to Angel in the first place? Is it because, like, Wesley was after him? Or was he trying to throw, like, why would he go there? Do you know what I mean? Because when he saw Wesley, I guess he had to keep playing up the, like, he had to keep lying or whatever. That the actual demon was after him. But it's like...
So Passion of the Nerd actually had a really interesting point that I'd never considered before. He said the fact that Barney felt that he needed to go to Angel to get away from Wesley shows that maybe we all have been underestimating Wesley a little bit, that maybe Wesley is actually better at his job than we give him credit for. If this guy is actually afraid of Wesley, like, we don't know how many demons Wesley actually has taken down at this point. Like, they haven't said.
That's
we
true.
We only see how he acts around Angel, and maybe he acts this way around Angel because he's intimidated by him and because all these people know his past. And so there's a sense of, like, you've seen me at my worst, so therefore, like, I feel a little insecure around you. So it's possible that Wesley actually was a threat to this guy.
Right. I mean, it's completely plausible. Like, Wesley is – I mean, this episode shows that he's, like, extremely competent and he is an asset, actually.
Yeah.
Like, he may be clumsy and, like, a dweeb a lot of the time, but I think it's a lot of it – it's he holds himself back with, like, insecurity, but he is very competent and he is very capable. And, yeah, that's – I mean, that's a good point. Like, who knows how long Wesley has been tailing him. I feel like they said it at some point, but I forget. But yeah.
And then I think, and then once he realized that Wesley wasn't the threat and then they had to go after this other guy, it's possible that he realized, oh, if I leave now, that it's going to show that I am actually the bad guy. You know what I mean? Right. So he was trying to play it out, probably hoping that they would find that guy dead and then just be like, okay, well, the trail is cold, can't find him. And he'd be or like, okay, him. Well, I'll just leave.
And that way, like, the demon he stole the horn from is like no longer a problem for him either.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So I think that's probably the more plausible thing. I am curious what his out was going to be, but he doesn't seem too worried about that because he found Cordelia. Mm-hmm. And Cordelia was obviously worth whatever fear he had towards Wesley and then now Angel. So then the switch happens. Barney's like, black is great. And then he like turns around, gets on the phone with someone, says, it's me. Of course, I got the Kungai horn. But listen, I got something even better, and looks at Cordelia. Ugh, this guy is just such a great actor. So then he reveals himself and says, pathetic, really, to Cordelia, which poor Cordelia, such whiplash. She's actually starting to bond with this guy. She's feeling better than she has all episode. Then he says, how old are you? 20-something, with your head all up in the clouds and your feet.
She's 19.
Yeah.
This is Angel the series, once again, trying to age her up to make her seem like she's older. Let's all say it together. She's 19.
Maybe she's had a birthday now. Maybe she's 20, you know?
No, she would be 19.
Oh, yeah, because it hasn't even been a year yet, and she graduated at 18. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, some people graduate at 17.
Let's all remember Cordelia is 19.
Okay, but I don't think that argument's going to work well in a few years.
I know. It's just so weird because, yeah, I mean, the show is just trying to age her up so, so, so much, and it's like – yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, I agree.
Just wanted to point that out. She's 19.
So Barney basically starts insulting her, but is reading all the emotions she's feeling, says, all self-absorbed, full of regret. Poor, poor you, poor little Cordelia with her delusions of an acting career. Again, this sounds a lot like the old woman that was taunting Cordelia in Room with a View, except this is so much better done because we can see the self-loathing. We can see the guilt. We've experienced it with her, but we've also had her talk to someone else about it in a way that was very much like recognizing, you know, the pain, the grief, and stuff that she's going
through. I still
don't
think that it's like self-loathing in any way, shape, or form. I don't think Cordelia can self-loathe, but it's definitely, I think, like guilt. And I think it's like a sense of she's like lost. Like she doesn't know, like she thinks she's a bad actress, and that's why he can read that from her. And that's just Cordelia, like, feeling like she's not meeting her own expectations. Like, I don't think it's like self-loathing. It's just maybe.
Yeah, that's true.
Like her self-esteem has taken a huge hit.
And then he says, you didn't possibly think you'd succeed, do you? You're a terrible actress. And she's like, you've never seen me. How could you possibly know? And then this part was so creepy. He was like, because you know, you feel it. Your entire being is whispering it to me right now. Me, on the other hand, you got to admit, I'm a pretty fine actor. Fooled you. Sorry, you're only second best. Angel's the first best. We've established this. Come on.
Angel is the best actor.
So Cordelia tries to run. He grabs her. This is terrifying. You don't like to hear the truth. No wonder your friend never told you about his demon hap. This is so cruel.
She says,
you don't know anything about me or Doyle. He says, I know you let him die. So again, he's speaking things that she is afraid for herself. Mm-hmm. It isn't necessarily truth, but she feels like it's true. And so therefore, he feels it too. And I'm sure he knows that it's probably not true, but he doesn't care. He's trying to beat her down. Also, it takes an incredibly evil person or being to feel what other people feel and to take pleasure in them feeling pain and
to use
fear
against them
and all this stuff. Yeah. Like that's a very cruel person.
That's like psychological torment, which is like it's worse than like physical torture almost.
It's also completely sadistic too, because you're going to feel those things as well. And you like that. That's like almost masochistic, you know?
So he probably doesn't have a soul. Or maybe he does.
I'm going to say, yeah, either way, he's garbage.
Garbage.
So then Barney says, no, but it feels true, doesn't it? Mixed in with all the pain and the grief. Oh, a healthy dollop of guilt, a nagging thought that maybe somehow you could have saved him if only you'd have been nicer to him. If only you'd let your walls down. If only for one freaking second you gave a damn about anyone besides yourself. This is so clever because this is him just expressing what Cordelia feels. Mm-hmm. And so these are all things that we've needed Cordelia to feel. Her realizing that she is selfish, her realizing that she does need to change. This is what I wanted to see in Room with a View.
Yeah.
I wanted to see Cordelia actually recognizing that she needs to change. At the spa, Angel's trying to hear what the Kung guy speaks, doesn't understand his language. Wesley walks in, but instead of wearing his leather, he's wearing his suit, which feels very interesting. Because you're like, I think Wesley has been so broken down to the point where he realizes, like, what's the point in pretending? So they figure out that it wasn't the arrow that Wesley shot him that proved fatal. It was his horn that had been broken off. They translate basically from the Kung guy and realize that it was Barney that killed him. Back at Angel's house, Cordelia's like, I'm having a vision. I'm having a vision. He's like, danger? And she was like, pain. It was like the best line I've seen her yet. Yeah. Knees him right between the legs. I adored that. He knocks her out, takes her back to his place. Cordelia comes to and then sees the gray blob, which I was like, okay, powers that be, why are you sending these random sculpture things? Yeah. I mean, I guess it does end up paying off because an angel, Mr. Artsy Fartsy over here, was like, that belonged to this certain vase that was from the whatever dynasty. I don't know. Angel knows everything.
He really does. Knows languages, arts, demon languages.
Supposedly.
People.
Everything except for Korean, unfortunately.
Yeah, what the hell?
So Cordelia is just really smart. If there's anything we can take away from this episode about Cordelia is that she doesn't panic in these situations.
Yeah, she thinks she actually really keeps fast a cool on head. Her feet. Yeah, she really does. And yep. I'm pretty sure that's due to her like time in Sunnydale. Because she used to panic the first few seasons of Buffy. She was just there screaming, but she
Giles! Yep.
Yeah, she's like, she thinks really quick on her feet and she's like very brave about it too, which is really cool to see. Like she'll just do it. Like she'll just distract, do whatever she needs to.
So then the guys come in. Wesley immediately is like, this is all my fault. Once they realize that Cordelia is gone, Angel's like, we both left her here. Neither of us knew. And then Wesley basically just has a breakdown and Angel is the only one that like kind of keeps his cool. And I think that's really interesting because Angel has to deal with guilt every single day. He has to deal with so much overwhelming grief and the memory of all of the victims that he took that I think he is able to bounce back faster than most people because of all the practice that he has.
Absolutely. And I also think it's just so interesting seeing Angel these last, I guess, 10 episodes now. And just how it just feels like even with his depression, his guilt, the things that he's lost, like he is really good at being there for other people. Mm-hmm. Which I think speaks a lot to his character because like you said, he already deals with so much on his own and he's right now dealing with like the death of his, I guess, only friend at this point. And he's still there for other people. Like even when it sounds like even when it looks like he's not listening, like he's listening to what Wesley's saying and to what Cordelia's saying, even if he's like pretending that he's not, you know? And it's just really nice to like see the side of Angel develop more because over on Buffy, it was just, he was doing this just for Buffy, but it's nice to see that this is like a trait of his that is not just for Buffy. And it's him like being that way toward people he cares about. So, and even people he doesn't care about because he doesn't really care about Wesley like that. But
I think also there's a subtle shift in how Angel kind of works through the pain and how he relates to people when things like this happen, because I think there has been a temptation for him in the past to cut himself off from people, like kind of what Cordelia was talking about a little bit at the beginning. Like, he does distance himself from people a little bit when things like this happen. And in this moment, he connects with Wesley. Mm-hmm. And he chooses to lean in and accept Wesley's help. And I thought that was really cool. And I also do want to point out too, like, it wasn't until the latter half of Hero that Doyle was kind of willing to fight alongside Angel in his demon form, like fully. And it's interesting how Wesley immediately just jumps in and is in the thick of the fight, even though he's not great at it. And yeah, that's something that I think that, like, it's kind of cool to see Wesley kind of pick up where Doyle left off, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
So Wesley says, "I'm a fool. The council was right to sack me. Yes, I was fired. I had two slayers in my care. One turns evil and now vegetates in a coma. The other is a renegade. Fire me. I'm surprised they didn't cut my head off. I'm useless, a fool." And I genuinely feel for him in this moment. And I think that is just a testament to the writing and to Alexis Denisov's amazing acting, that you care for this sniveling, stupid fool. Also, Buffy and Angel do a phenomenal job of doing recap and catching people up to where characters are at in a very organic way. So for people who have not watched Buffy, you can ascertain who Wesley is and what he has to atone for just through these snippets of dialogue. And it's great. So Angel figures out the ugly gray blobby thing is a sculpture by Van Giesen, Maiden with Urn, and shows it to Wesley and says, okay, that's got to be where Barney took her. And then Wesley's like, all right, you can go rescue her. And Angel's like, no, we can rescue her. I need your help, Wesley. Ah, love it. So he's like, you're the only one in the room that can translate that. Are you with me? And then they go. Cut to the computer screen. They figure out where exactly it is. It's at an auction house. Cut to the auction house. Barney is leading the auction. And we note that Wolfram and Hart is there. Okay. I'm like, when are they going to come in? We haven't seen them since Sense and Sensitivity. And really, we didn't see very much of them. So I'm like kind of itching, chomping at the bit. Let's go.
I think that's intentional.
Ugh, okay. Driving me nuts.
Okay.
I'm like, all right, I'll believe you. I don't remember what happens next. I'm literally like, okay, what's happening in this episode? Because it's been so long since I've seen Angel. So
I think we're supposed to assume that Wolfram and Hart is more of like a, not like a big bad, or maybe they are going to be the big bad of the season, like something that's brewing in the background or something. I don't know. But I like that they're dropping hints like here and there. And it
they're
makes
really
you
building
want
it up
more. And you're just like, what is this law firm? What do they want? They clearly have their eye on Angel. They're watching what he's doing. Now they know about Cordelia, that she's a seer and stuff like that. So obviously they have an investment, like a big investment in Angel. So spooky, very spooky.
So they're like, hey, we have a seer, and they bring Cordelia in, and she immediately opens her big mouth and says, I'm not really a seer. I only had a vision once. No, don't confirm it. Don't confirm it. So then people start bidding on her. They get to around 11,000, 12,000. And cut back to Angel and Wesley. Wesley's taping a knife to his leg.
Just very tightly. Like very,
just get a
very
leg holster. I'm sure Angel has one. Angel's got to have something. Maybe Wesley is not good at his job. How did he kill demons with stuff like this? Where's his crossbow? That would be more effective than this. Why? I just don't get it. Whatever. So back in the auction, everyone's only bidding up to 11,000. They're about to sell Cordelia, and then this is just an incredible, like, funny character moment, but also, like, she's so quick thinking. Mm-hmm. So she starts to, like, auction herself off. Hey, you know, you pay twice for that for cataracts. These eyes are flawless even without the stupid visions. That's the best you can do. And, like, Hank goes to, like, put his hand over her mouth, and Barney's like, no, wait, she's selling herself. This is gold.
Barney's loving it. He's just like, more money. Yes.
This is Cordelia knowing her worth, man. So good.
Yeah.
So it just keeps going up. They go to 15, 16, 17, 18, and then the lady from Wolfram and Hart says 30,000, and she's sold to Wolfram and Hart. Oh, snap. Oh, snap.
Not good.
Not good. So everyone's packing up their stuff in the storage room. They're talking about extracting Cordelia's eyes, which is absolutely terrifying. And then we cut to Angel and Wesley. I love how Alexis Denisoff really just kind of like embodies how Wesley would walk and run. Like the way they're going down the stairs. Did you notice that? Angel's like striding with a purpose and Wesley's like dooper 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 as he's like goes down the stairs. I'm sure y'all can imagine that in your mind. That's the best I can do with, you know, sound effects. But it's really funny because you're this isn't like Macho Man coming to save the girl. This is like, Angel, Angel, keep up. Your legs are so long. I can't keep up with you kind of walk, you know, like.
It's really cute.
It is. It's really great. And then this transition is great. So Angel talks to an employee and is like, hey, where's the auction? The guy's like, sorry, we don't have any auctions here. And Angel vamps out. He's like, where is it? Puts on his like Darth Vader voice.
Wait, what did he say?
He says, where is it? Brings out the big voice. The guy's like, it's in the tulip room that way.
Oh my God.
So they're getting ready to pull out Cordelia's eyeballs. The guys get into the storage or they go out into the front room. This guy pops out and he's like, hey, have you got a number? And Angel just like punches him, goes flying in the back, sailing through. Angel starts beating up the guy and Barney's like, Hank, stakes. I was like, okay, Barney. Okay. Angel immediately starts pummeling all of the guys. Wesley goes down immediately trying to get the knife he taped to his leg off. Angel's like, you know what? Just go get Cordelia. I'll take all 15 of the guys coming after me. You know, it's okay. I got it. You know, I'm used to multitasking. So Wesley's like, are you all right? Trying to make small talk as he's like trying to help Cordelia get out. She's like, I'm so far not. And so then he gets her wrists out, says, all right, let's go. Get out of here. Follow me. And then, okay, this is my favorite moment of the entire episode. I rewound this like 4 times because Wesley, I can't. He's like, he stops, looks at Barney and says, you butcher an innocent girl, will you? And as he's doing so, his glasses are like slipping down his nose and he like uses his middle finger to like push it up, but it doesn't go all the way up. And he says, I'm going to thrash you within an inch of your life and then I'm going to take that inch. I was like, what are you, her father?
It's so funny.
What's he going to do? Like, Barney, go out to the woodshed. Go pull me off a switch. Let's go.
No, the way Alexis Denisoff, like, delivered those lines, just his, like, physical comedy, like, the way he just said it, I just, it's incredible. Like,
it is.
You can't even, like, I don't even know. Like, yeah. It can't be replicated.
You can't look away.
You literally can't look away. Like, I was laughing so hard.
Yeah.
So hard. Oh, my God.
He just does this – he has this wonderful blend of geeky dorkiness that is also just so lovable. You know how his character could easily fall into annoying? And you're like, just get off my screen. But there's this warmth to him and you can tell he genuinely cares and genuinely is trying his hardest.
Yeah.
And that's what makes him so lovable. And so seeing him stick up for Cordelia in that moment is just so precious, even if he's just not great at it.
He's trying his best.
Oh, he is so funny. And I wrote my notes. I was like, this is the moment where I fell in love with Wesley. They had to give us this moment to win him over completely. And it just, they killed it. So good. So the lawyer's like, our merchandise was just taken off the market. 3 guesses by whom? Angel's really getting under these people's skin. I'm getting the feeling. Mm-hmm. So Angel fights the security guards. Wesley pounding Barney against the floor. Barney rolls over and gets on top of Wesley, and then Cordelia grabs the horn and stabs him in the back. Well, right after Angel does like this wrestler's move where he jumps and like brings his elbow down onto this guy. There's just some great physical action going on here as well. Cordelia has her first demon kill. It took her 3 seasons of Buffy to stake a vampire. And in 10 episodes of Angel, she gets her first demon.
And then he like shrivels up into like a little dry raisin. or something. Like, what a happened turd? To it? Yeah, he looks like a great little steaming turd.
Wait, was that the horn that like takes the power, the essence of a person, like he, like that he took off of that guy?
Yeah,
was that what that was?
Been. Okay, I yeah. my stupid ass was like, this is how this type of demon like dies.
Nope.
I was like, it's like when a vampire explodes into dust. Like, this is how the type of demon Barney was dies. Like, they just shrivel up into like a little
turd.
A
raisin.
A little turd.
No, I think it was the horn, because it says it uses the person's power or something like that. So I think it's kind of poetic that not only does he die by the horn that he cut off, but I think he dies by his own power. Ooh. And he's killed by Cordelia.
Karma.
Yeah. So there's a lot that's going on there. Right? Yeah.
But
I think is very, very intentional. But yeah, mm-hmm. he dies and none of us mourn him. So Cordelia says, I never doubted for a minute that you'd find me. Angel says, well, I was lucky. I had a rogue demon hunter on my side. And Wesley says, glad I could be of service. You could tell a small part of him was healed right there. They're like a little family and I love them so much. And I feel awful because Doyle just died, but I really like this dynamic.
This dynamic works so well. It's really good. Especially like
it's a joy
the
to
next
watch.
Scene.
Yeah. So then we cut to Angel's apartment. Cordelia is ironing her wrinkled drawing and putting it in a frame. And Angel is cooking at the stove. They're talking about their latest, like, adventure. Wesley's chiming in as he's packing his bags. And Cordelia says, I frame this for saving my life and as a reminder that something of Doyle's is in our office.
How that so
just like
much.
Uncharacteristically sweet of Cordelia.
Yeah,
it's so sweet.
It's so sweet. And it's like this is her first step to like acceptance, right? Like of her gift and of, I guess, her visions.
Yeah, no, totally. She framed the drawing because it's a reminder that this is something precious that Doyle gave her and that it is something that she needs to take care of and she has a responsibility moving forward. Like there's this sense of ownership now, which I really love. So in Matthew Mills's essay, Music as a Narrative Agent in Angel, he talks about how we heard Doyle's theme really prevalently in Hero multiple times, specifically, obviously, at the very end. And then we hear it again also in this episode. He says, Doyle's theme is truncated upon each of its further appearances. The first is Cordelia tells Barney about Doyle, features only the first four bars played on the flute. When Angel tells Wesley he had a partner, we hear the first two bars only, as we do when Cordelia frames the picture of her first vision as a memento of Doyle, in both cases played on the piano accompanied by strings. It is as if Doyle's theme recedes as his colleagues come to terms with his death, which I thought was kind of beautiful.
That is really beautiful.
And I will say this now, this will not be the last time we hear Doyle's theme. It does pop back up later. So then Wesley's like, well, I'll be off then. Angel, who knows when our paths will cross again. Angel's like, all right. Wesley shakes his hand. Cordelia's like, do you even know where you're headed? He's like, us rogue demon hunters rarely do. Wherever evil lurks, wherever the forces of darkness threaten humanity, that's where I'll be. And they're like already moving on to breakfast. And Cordelia's like, well, okay. Keep in touch.
And he's still talking.
He's like, yes, I will. And you could tell he like doesn't want to leave.
Yeah.
He wants to stay. Yeah. And he like keeps coming back. And the script says, through storm and rain, heat, famine, looks at Angel putting some scrambled eggs on a plate, deep, painful, gnawing hunger. I was like, why don't you just stay and eat, dude? Like you can leave after. Like, come on. Of course, Angel sees it and he's like, breakfast. And Wesley's like, oh, yes. But it's symbolic. Like this moment is supposed to be, want to join our gang, want to be a part of our family, want to have a place in this world.
It's so funny, though, watching him, like, as he's, like, saying all these things, you see Angel in the background, he's cooking the eggs, and he just, like, grabs a plate, puts it on the table, and starts putting eggs.
That's right.
Do you want to stay, Wesley? Like, breakfast? Like
he doesn't even look at him. He just grabs the plate like, yeah, I know you're hungry.
He literally,
here you
like,
go.
Doesn't even look at him, doesn't even acknowledge what he's saying. He's just like, okay, this guy does not want to leave. So,
that's
you know what?
Really funny.
Let's get him some breakfast. And he just, like, very like sneakily grabs a plate, puts it on the table. Like,
I Angel, love that detail.
I love Angel.
That's really cute. I did not notice that. And then Cordelia, so cute. She's like, one of the perks of the job, after an all-nighter of fighting the lurking evil, we get eggs. What a phenomenal boss. Like, right? Angel, I want to work boss. There. So then they end the episode with them talking about food and sitting around eating, like, a family atmosphere. And it's so just cute. So precious.
Yeah, it is really
and
precious.
You know what? It's a little bit of hope at the end of this episode. Three people who are mourning separately come together, find their place, find their purpose. And yeah, they just gelled so well. And I'm really excited to see their dynamic grow. It's going to be so fun.
Same, same.
Oh, I liked that episode. That was fun. It was Let's do really another one.
Oh, the next episode is really, really good. Somnambulous. This is when we kind of get into – we get a lot of flashbacks in the next episode, actually.
Yes,
and Jeremy Renner is a guest star.
That's right. Hawkeye is here.
Hawkeye's coming to town next
Hawkeye's
episode.
Hawkeye's coming. And then this is Tim Minear's first official script that he wrote. Like, I mean, I guess he went back and edited some of the other ones. But yeah, I'm excited. I'm really, really stoked to be in this part of the season, because I feel like from here on out, I mean, there's still a few like stinkers, but the majority of the episodes are just so good. So good. So... all right, guys, that was Parting Gifts. Let us know your thoughts. Did you guys like Wesley when he first appeared? Do you feel like he gelled really well in the group? I'm kind of curious what people thought when they first saw him. Just let us know, because as always, it is fun to dialogue with you guys and hear your thoughts. So until next time, guys, we will see you then. Thanks so much for listening to Investigating Angel. If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to follow, subscribe, and review us on all platforms. You can also find us on Instagram at Investigating Angel Podcast, and you can email us at investigatingangelpodcast@gmail.com.